The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I am going to talk about the Avatamsaka Sutra today, which sutra is the same word, it's equivalent to scripture. But first, I want to tell you how I kind of came to the sutra in this, 25th year of my monastic training, because I did read it many years ago, and I'll tell you a little bit about that. But I'd like to tell you how I came to basically falling in love with it again. Last fall, I was meditating on one of our basic teachings, and that was of impermanence, which I do periodically because it's very helpful and it kind of clears the airwaves for me a bit. But this time, it hit me to my core. Permanence, impermanence is not something that's static. It's really dynamic. I mean, it's so dynamic that you cannot stand anywhere within it, truly. So it's not like it's something out there with the universe, the stars and the moon, you know, the seasons. It's my body, sure, you know, I know that. But when you meditate with something like that, if you you can open to it in a certain way where it just hits ground zero. There's nothing to stand, no place to stand, no place to go. But there you are with impermanence. It's not like you're there you are with the eternal, or there you are with, you know, all these wonderful thoughts. You're there in the midst of conditions. And the conditions, I think all of us will agree, are very much impermanent. And we happen to be part of that. And this is a paragraph that I love from our Buddhist writings that elucidates this idea of impermanence. Turning and shifting is the path to emptiness. Transforming what went before, transforming what comes after. Ever transforming, shifting and changing. Changing and changing, turning and shifting. Transforming at the same time and in the same place. The blazing tongues of fire, the one in all, being born and perishing, existing simultaneously at each instant, the already transformed and the not yet transformed ever becoming. The experience of each single sensation is like this. That's a different perspective than what we kind of usually have as we're going about our daily life. But that stayed with me, and it was very unsettling because I didn't really feel like I had a place to be or stand or somebody to become so much anymore. And now this is where the Avatamsaka Sutra is going to start coming in. I'm just going to let you know that a little bit about the sutra, and that is that the Avatamsaka Sutra is called also the Flower Ornament Sutra and is believed to have been delivered by the Buddha while he was in deep meditation after his enlightenment. And this in and of itself amazes me that somebody would try to write in words about such an experience. And the sutra itself, most of you probably know, it's equivalent to, I think, maybe 1,300-1,400 pages. So it's not short and concise, you know, things that we can connect with. It's huge. And that's the idea. It's so big that we can't really grab hold of it, like impermanence. And here's a short verse from part of the sutra. The Buddha freely appears in the world to teach all living beings, showing the ways to truth, having them, that's us, understand and enter, guiding us in a position to realize highest wisdom. So for me, that was one of the first things that I realized with this sutra, reading it again. And I have to tell you, when I was a novice, we had a novice reading list. And on the list was to read the Avatamsaka Sutra. So, being who I am, I diligently did it. And I couldn't tell you what I read, but I read it, most of it. I got through volume one, through volume two, halfway, and then I said, I don't know about this. So I only read half of volume two, but I did read all of volume three. And I thought, well, there is that. And it's interesting after all this time that I have come back around to it again because I was asked to do this talk. You know, I don't know that I would have looked at it again unless I would have been had I not been asked to do this talk. So that's what struck me when I read it again, is that it is Buddhas and Bodhisattvas dedicated to helping us. And it's helping all people in all worlds, all the different realms, but we're part of that. And to recognize that it is talking about Buddha realms in a way that is hard to understand and hard to relate to, it is for our own benefit. And I think of it as a guide of how bodhisattvas, and you've probably some of you heard, bodhisattvas with the big Bs, you know, the Manjusris and the Samantabhadras and Avalokiteshvara type bodhisattvas. It's their guide how they live, as well as how they continue their practice. But what it shows us is in various ways, and I'll look into this with you today just a little bit, but how we as bodhisattvas with little Bs can start to work towards being more little Bs. I'm not convinced that we can become big bees in this lifetime with this human condition, but I don't know that. But I do find quite a lot of inspiration from how to live our lives better anyway. Part of the Avatamsaka Sutra also talks about the Four Noble Truths, or that it calls the Four Holy Truths. And I'm not going to talk about that specifically, but what I want to read is something from each paragraph. Each of the holy truths has something at the end of the paragraph, which I found interesting. And this says, in this world there are 4 quadrillion such names to express the 4 holy truths, in accord with mentalities of sentient beings to cause them to be harmonized and pacified. And I feel like that covers everybody. Quadrillion is a lot of us. As people that have died, that will die, you know, in the hells, you know, and, you know, there sure is everybody. I think that's the idea. And for each and every one of us, there is kind of a customized prescription, a way of saying something that we can actually hear it. And hear it in a big way, not just, oh, okay, yeah, I like that, but in a way that can really transform our lives. And the Avatamsaka also, it's characteristic. We get kind of quadrillion, you know, something for everybody. And there's another phrase verse that I'm going to read, and this is what it says. Manjusri, truth is always thus. The kings of truth, which would be the Buddhas, have just one truth. People unhindered by anything, they leave birth and death by, I'm sorry, they lead birth, they leave birth and death by one road. So there's only one way to go. At the same time, there's 4 quadrillion ways of going and hearing it. But there's really only one way. And that's one of the amazing things about Buddhism for me, is that there's a tremendous variety, and there somehow is a fundamental one way that we all go together. And the Avatamsaka Sutra points to that over and over again. The one and the many. And it does it in, you know, an amazing amount of different ways it talks about that. I looked up the in the Shambhala dictionary about the definition of the Sutra of the Garland of Buddhas, which is the same as the Avalokitesvara Sutra. And it says, it's a Mahayana Sutra which emphasizes, above all, mutually unobstructed penetration. And also, the human mind is the universe itself and is identical with the Buddha. So you have the idea of inner penetration, where we think that we have some ideas about things that actually are limiting, but this talks about that we are the Buddhas, we are the universe of the Avalokitesvara, as well as human beings dealing with conditions at the same time, at this very moment. If we can simply allow ourselves to start with believing it. Or for me, I like to question things a lot. Is this true? Is this really, really true? That helps me anyway. And I also found a good book by D.T. Suzuki, which was helpful in explaining the Avalokitesvara Sutra. And he says that the realm of the bodhisattvas is realizable when the seemingly solid outlines of individuality melt away and the feeling of finiteness no more oppresses us. So the assumption is that we're already there, wherever there is, but it is our ideas, which we've all heard a lot, about the seemingly solid outlines of individuality and the feeling of finiteness, which no more oppresses us. And what's that is saying to me is that what we run into in our lives, our conditions, our sufferings, is that we see them as walls, barriers, blocks, obstructions, you know, things like that. And according to what the Avalokitesvara Sutra is teaching, it's not true. So I ask myself, is there a bridge between the universes described in the Avalokitesvara Sutra and our daily life conditions? And I've come up with a few things that I found helpful, and I'll pass these along to you. But one thing is, it's useless to try to understand Buddha nature or the universe of universes, as we were singing today, with any inkling of an I or a me perspective. So, here's that. Now, I have a few thoughts about what I have found helpful in my own training to see if there is a bridge that actually is helpful to finding out if there is such a thing as the Buddha nature or the universe of universes, as the Avalokitesvara Sutra points to a lot. So this is getting back to my own meditation experience, and that is part of the process of being a Buddhist. And it's I first came to Buddhism and didn't know anything, really. And then I found, well, I do know something. And what I found, knowing something wasn't really, it was a good start and it got me going, but it wasn't really all that helpful in a certain way, because it was limiting. And then I got, next step was not knowing. Well, now I don't know. So I go one way, and then I go another way, you know, but it just didn't work. And you can see that it's my own brain trying to work things out in a way that it's comfortable with, that's okay. You know, familiar, probably pretty painful, but okay. But there's a place of not knowing that isn't like, well, I'll never know this, you know, this is way beyond my comprehension, you know, who am I to think that I could ever understand such things? There's another way of being more open with that. And what I ask myself is, what can I do to know the eternal as it really exists? And in that place, there's no place to go, and it is a way of, it's pointing to just sitting still in meditation and just saying, I don't know, and I just have to be there. Without any ideas of knowing or not, but just simply sitting still. And this is where the practice of meditation can come in and be a useful tool. It can really help out. Because non-knowing is an acceptance that is not bound to our ideas, an openness that is without limits of concepts. And this is called faith. And here's another verse from Avatamsaka Sutra. Faith is the basis of the path, the mother of virtues, nourishing and growing in good ways, cutting away the net of doubt, freeing from the torrents of passion, revealing the unsurpassed road of ultimate peace. So again, it's not a method. Having faith is really sitting still with the faith that we have. Isn't grabbing onto anything. And it really isn't an acceptance of anything either. It's not like, well, I'm accepting I'm a bad person, or I'm accepting I'm a good person, or that I'm, you know, whatever. Or that it's just sitting still with that. Not getting latched onto it. Within this, I found another thing that I read years ago. I think it was years ago. I did the class for the local congregation, and we studied Uchiyama's book on refining your life. No, opening the hand of thought, that's right. And so I practice this every once in a while, and I have come to use this as a helpful tool. And what I think of it now is we carry thoughts and feelings around with us. This is kind of normal daily life stuff. But to actually open the hand of thought, or sometimes it feels like a fist. You know what I mean? A tight, clenching, I'm not going to let go of this whether we recognize it or not. Fist. But letting go of the hand, opening the hand of thought is more like, in the energy of it isn't pushing away, it's not grabbing onto anything. And the way I, as a way of telling you what I think it is to me at this particular point, it's like a time release video of a flower opening. Have you seen that? Where it's just this gorgeous thing that's happening, and it's just happening, and it's natural. The petals kind of fall away in this real gentle energy. And it's not like a big deal. It's just gone. You know, it's just the impermanence, the shifting and the changing that we're opening to. So, and then in the Avatamsaka, I found another example. I just kind of browsed through there, and I kept finding all these little gems. So here's another one. When we find ourselves in difficult situations, opening the hand of thought or emotion, I'll put that in there too, or the opening that tight, clenching fist. Here's a different take that I found helpful. Receiving a teacher's guidance, we should wish that all beings bear themselves with dignity and that their actions be truthful. This is hard to do. When somebody tells us something that we don't want to hear, the last thing we think about is opening the hand of thought. You know, I mean, that's just that fertile ground where we really like to get in there and get ourselves in trouble. But this isn't just saying opening the hand of thought, but it's also making a wish that all beings hold themselves in dignity. In other words, what we are experiencing in that very moment can be opened to wishing that all sentient beings, that their actions be truthful. And I just found that a very helpful tool because it gets the me and my out of the way, and it broadens things, and it broadens my perspective to something that is more universal. And another thing that I have found helpful over the years is in meditation, giving myself permission to, or allowing myself to be part of the universe and allowing my karma to fulfill itself. So it's not an airy-fairy type of thing. It's grounded in daily life. And what I mean by allowing our karma to fulfill itself is this, that we do the very best we can, for starters. And our lives are to convert our karma. I think most of us have heard that enough. But how do we allow our karma to fulfill itself? Well, we sit still within the midst of conditions, and that's difficult to do. But if we cannot buy into our karma, but to allow itself to be, to come and to go, to be part of the universe, to be part of that dynamic impermanence, then it will fulfill itself, and eventually it will burn itself out. Or not burn itself out, it would just gradually dissolve. Now this is kind of big time stuff, but it is doable, and it does work, and it's something that I feel as Buddhists we aspire towards. And so I found something in Dogen that help me kind of understand how you can be part of the universe as well as kind of deal with daily life conditions. And he talks about that there's a little boat in the ocean, you know, bobbing along. I don't know, I think of a little boat, not a big boat. And we're in the boats, they're, you know, setting the sails, and you have the rudder. Is that what it is? Steering. So we're steering. We're doing something. We're making mistakes. I think it was an udder, but it's actually a rudder. But anyway, we'll eventually get to it, you know, figure it out. And the ocean, of course, is our Buddha nature. And the question I ask myself is, am I willing to give up my identity enough so that I can say the ocean is here too? It's pretty straightforward. And I had it's interesting that you're here. We had an experience last, when was that, August? We went river rafting down the Klamath River. You know, this was neat for me. It was a number of monks, and we had Marty and Carol helped us so we didn't get into deep trouble. which is a good thing because we didn't know what we were doing. But it really was a wonderful concrete experience of the river is in control. We're on the little boat. It was a big raft because there were, eight of us or seven of us in one raft. But there was no question in my mind who was in control. It was this big, beautiful, deep river. And our job was to avoid the deep holes in the rocks and not get ourselves in deep trouble. And, you know, which is what we did because we had some good instruction and guidance, which was very helpful. But there's no question in my mind that I was constantly thinking about, we are on a river, this river is really big, and I'm not sure where it's going to take us if we're not really careful. In other words, it was bigger than myself. And I grew up along the oceans, and I've swam a lot in the Pacific Ocean, and I have a deep respect for the ocean. I also have a deep respect for the mountains because I know that they can turn at any moment and change things, and they can get out of control quickly. quickly. So I looked at this big river in that same light, because I know what it can, it has a potential. But it had this beautiful quality of supporting us. That wasn't a big deal. It wasn't like it was trying to work it really hard to supporting us. And, you know, some of us were kind of heavier than others and the boat are kind of doing the wrong things, you know, leaning to one side or another. It just simply carried us down the river and we had a really nice day. So there's that. And then another thing I recognized that in meditation, when I'm in a place of non-knowing or not knowing or just wondering what the heck I'm doing, I came to this realization, really, that in our exhortations in one of our books, Buddhist, is it Book of Life? Well, in our lay liturgy book, it has the exhortations for people that are dying. And we must have been reading it, or I read it periodically just to kind of keep it fresh in my mind in case I need to come to a situation that I need to deal with that, somebody dying. But what I was struck with is the words, I am willing. They're in capitals, and it's a couple times in there. What struck me is it's I am willing, period. It's not I am willing to go through this and get through it the best I can, or I'm willing to, admit something. It's just simply an opening. I am willing. And it's strong. It's in capital letters and underlined. And it's a good teaching for us when we're in really difficult situations and, you know, someday we'll all be facing our own death. But it's a good teaching for me when I'm sitting, I do not know, I'm really uncomfortable. I am willing. It's kind of not a big deal in a certain kind of way because, you just open to whatever. And Dogen says then, with all these different ways we do things, that studying and reflecting on Buddha's teachings will inevitably show us beyond our current understanding. I like that. Because I personally don't find that my current understanding is one that I want to live with the rest of my life. I want it to change. So I just have one more little thing and then I'll close. This is a story, a very short story. And it's an Indian master was asked by one of his disciples, how do I find peace? And the master replied, let go of how and I and you will find peace. Well, I like that because it gets right to the point, you know. Well said, I thought. So in conclusion, the bodhisattvas described in the Avatamsaka Sutra move freely in the worlds of the Buddhas, in the worlds of the hell realms, of the Asuras, and in our own world. They move freely, unobstructed, whatever the situation, without any hesitation, without any lingering. Just keep moving along. I pray that all sentient beings learn from them how we can move more freely without hindrance and barriers. Excuse me. It just means a lot to me. This is what this sutra is offering us in our daily life. It's what we can do and what we aspire to, and I pray that we all accomplish it. Thank you.